We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,455 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside the fan favorite. He's back for another week, Marty Foster. Marty, how are you?
I'm pretty good, all things considered. Lots of things are, annoying me at the moment. But in myself, the sun is shining, it's not raining, and all is good.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I tell you what, today is going to be a bit of an abbreviated podcast. It's not going to be a long one. We're not going to hit the full time. And I do have some things we can discuss. Nothing pressing, nothing too big. But you do have a few things you were scratching down in your notes this week. So let's cover what you got in your notes first. Then we'll go from there. And I'll just kind of segue into what I've got pulled up from from earlier in the week.
I'm quite happy to go along that path that you are suggesting, as long as you don't mispronounce Edinburgh again.
Did I mispronounce that?
Edinburgh.
Excuse me.
Melissa pronounced it Edinburgh.
I got Glasgow right. I finally got Glasgow correct.
Glasgow, yeah.
Yeah? Not Glasgow.
Well, it's Glasgow.
And I got Aberdeen right.
Yeah, Aberdeen, cool. But Edinburgh, not Edinburgh.
Got it. Yeah, our Scottish listeners are now unsubscribing. Thank you.
You're welcome. They're welcome. So, at the moment, one of the things that really annoyed me earlier on in the week, and I don't know why, I do know why I do it, I watch the news to see what the enemy's up to. And it was the BBC News, and in a story that wasn't even really a story, a US radio DJ had deepfaked some photographs of the Donster, Donald Trump, looking like he was having a great time at a party that was only attended by black people. And the BBC decided to say that the news was that AI and computer-generated graphics could make these very convincing deepfaked photographs to sway voters in an election. So the fact that Trump and his campaign party had nothing to do with these photographs was completely ignored. It was just, oh, they could do this if they wanted to, and it would sway your vote. Followed by a story of delivered by a very ugly, fat British man in Washington talking about the court cases that Trump has been going through and how he's won one but has still got these other two that he's facing, so it won't be so good for him. So the whole thing was anti-Trump. I'm not pro-Trump by a long shot, but it was obviously clear, partisan, one-sided, biased news reporting of a story that wasn't even news. And you and Melissa talked about the same thing. So you kind of stole my thunder there. You talked about AI and would we know if we've already been exposed and swayed one way or another by AI and computer generated graphics, images, even moving images. But yeah, that was the first thing I wanted to get off my chest.
Okay. Well, I've shown this video to others. I've not shown it to you yet, but I'm going to. This is the new Google Pixel phone. Okay. So this is with obviously this, you know, this is not the ones like we build, but these are the ones where it comes stock from the factory. It's got the Google software and everything on it. Have you seen one of these yet?
No. You asked me the other day if I was in the market for a new phone because me desperately to get rid of the iPhone.
Yes,
and I don't blame you. I agree with you, but no, I'm not going to go to the expense just yet.
Okay, all right. This is what the new Google phone can do. And Samsung is marketing their new, I think it's S23 Ultra or whatever it is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't keep up with those. Or S24 or something. I'm not sure. But they're marketing theirs to be able to do almost the same thing. Now, Google has been able to kind of leapfrog everyone else in their camera software. The cameras on these phones, they're good, but the software that comes with them actually make them better. They're the ones, you know, the software kind of accents what the cameras can do. And this is what these new phones with this AI stuff can do. I mean, obviously we can do some of this stuff now, but wait until you see some of this other stuff. This'll, you know, you can add things to it. You know, you can add like wind sounds and change the speech of people. You can talk over things, give things, you know, whatever. You can add voice prints to things or things like that. And then remove the blurring, obviously. This is where it gets interesting. Now you can make everybody smile even when they're not. It will automatically change everyone's face in the photo if you don't like the takes.
Yeah.
So what's real and what's not? There's no, like, reality's not here.
You don't know anymore. You don't know what's real and what isn't anymore because you can't trust a single thing that you see online. If you see it with your own eyes in the same space, then you can believe it. But if it's a video or a photograph, you have to question, is it real? Because if you don't, you're going to get confused, swayed one way or another, led to believe something that simply isn't true. And I suppose that's the crux of the story that the BBC put across. You can't trust the evidence of your own eyes when it comes to online digital imagery. But that's not the way they portrayed the story. They portrayed it that Trump might do this. And that's what really aggravated me. It was so obvious that it was a propaganda piece and a partisan propaganda piece for the Democrats. So what the hell that has to do with the British broadcasting company on the early evening news, I don't know. Other than the fact that whoever is sat in the Oval Office has a great influence on what happens in my country. And as we were talking about in prep, I can totally relate to the little fat man from North Korea that, you know, he's nervous of American aggression. But I'm confused because the current administration seems to be totally bought and paid for by China. So therefore, they're his allies. I'm more concerned that it's the Democrats in the White House rather than the Republicans or, heaven forbid, some kind of independent.
I think it goes to the research I've been doing. I think it goes to the scissor strategy. You know, they've turned everything back around on itself here in the West. These people that are involved with historically, the people that are involved with Moscow and Beijing, the Democrats, they're the ones that have the long-standing history of being involved with Moscow, and now all of a sudden they're not, and Beijing, and now all of a sudden they're not, and they're going to flip everything back around again. You watch. It's going to happen. They're going to flip it around now again, and they're going to say, oh, no, it's been the Republicans that are in bed with the Chinese.
Well, if the very fact that the Democrat Party are so involved and can be proven to be involved, particularly the Bidens, with China and Russia Ukraine, then, you know, there shouldn't be as much credence to the argument that you were suggesting that they'll put forward, so that they would be able to get away with it. But unfortunately, they will, because people are stupid. I'm sorry, I'm talking to the majority of you here. You are as thick as mince if you can't see through this shit.
I guess that's part of that considered an informed opinion that we're all welcome to.
Yeah.
China, their foreign ministry today has said that they are they're going to become a force of peace in the world. Let me get the exact quote. One sec. I had it and I lost it. The Chinese foreign minister, Wang Yi, has said that China sees itself as a, quote, force for peace in the world. This is an exact quote. In the face of complex turmoil in the international environment, China will persist in being a force of peace, a force for stability, and a force for progress in the world. A conflict where prolonged a conflict, when prolonged, tends to deteriorate and escalate and could lead to an even bigger crisis.
See, the first part of what you said was they see themselves. As we're in the world of identity politics, what you're saying is China identifies as a peaceful nation. That's bollocks. We know that, you know, that's total crap. I have this picture in my head of me when I was at my prime, probably about 27 years old, jet black hair, tall, well-built, muscular. And sometimes when I'm speaking to people and I haven't looked in a mirror lately, I think I still look like that. So that's how I identify at that given time. Then I realize that I'm a gray-haired old man, thinning on top, wrinkled, falling apart at the seams, and that is the truth of my identity. That's who I am. So China might be identifying as a peaceful nation. They are fucking not.
No, they are certainly not. Did you have anything else on your notepad that you wanted to get to before I get into some of these?
Well, you were going to gloss over the budget, right?
Oh, yes, no. Yes. I just asked the simple question. I asked it in prep. I said, because it's all over the headlines, I said, why do I care about, excuse me, not why do I care, why am I made to care, or why should I care about Jeremy Hunt's budget proposal? I'll tell you why
from a Tory perspective is because they think it is a vote winning, tax cutting kind of a budget. But it is absolutely far from that. It's lies. It's smoke and mirrors. It's diversion. The art of warfare is deception, and the British public are being deceived. And the way in which they're being deceived is that there's another 2.5% coming off the base rate of national insurance. And I talked about this a few weeks ago when I suddenly realised I was about £80-90 a month better off. Why am I that much better off? Because they'd already cut national insurance once, and now they've cut it again. National insurance is the mechanism by which the National Health Service is paid for, certain elements of the benefit system are paid for, and the way in which British citizens qualify by X amount of regular payments for their state pension. So if the Tories continue to erode national insurance down to next to nothing or nothing, there will be no money to pay for the National Health Service, at which point everyone will need their own private medical health care. We know already that 500,000 people a year in the United States, despite having private medical health care, go bankrupt because of medical bills, because of the corrupt way that big pharma, hospitals, and insurance companies inflate the prices of procedures and treatments. So that's one reason why you don't have to care, because it won't affect you. But everybody in the United Kingdom should be up in arms about this reduction in national insurance payments, because it's the only bit of our tax money, our tax revenue, that is ring-fenced for the National Health Service. The other thing that they've done is they've maintained the base rate of tax and the upper rate of tax as the same. So there's no increase in that, which means that our national debt will just get worse and worse because we're sending so much money over to Ukraine. We're spending a fortune on illegal immigrants, none of which have been removed to Rwanda yet. They're still coming despite the fact that we pay the French to keep them in France. We've been paying Rwanda to prepare for them there. So our national debt is just going to get worse. So that budget appears on the face of it to be a vote-winning, tax reduction or tax stabilising budget. It is, in fact, a kick in the bollocks to every British citizen who's looking forward to a state pension, who wants the security net of the National Health Service. So that's why British people should be concerned. But anyone else in the world, they wouldn't give a toss.
I can understand the concern, but I mean, we're kind of arguing over, in terms of finances, in as it relates to, you know, our nations, we're kind of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, aren't we? I mean, we've already hit the iceberg financially, economically. We are going down. It's just we're just kind of figuring out how hard that crash landing is going to be at the moment.
Right. Okay. If we're going to use a ship flooding at sea analogy, The first thing you do is you stabilize. All warships are built with what is called a citadel, and different compartments can be locked off and sealed, even with machinery still running in those compartments, and they can be completely filled with water. So if you've got a bit of a list to starboard, you would flood a compartment to port to stabilize that list. Next thing you do is repair the hole through which the water is coming, and then you would pump out those compartments and get rid of the water. So if modern day damage control techniques were used on board a ship like the Titanic and fast enough, it could have been saved. And that's what we've got to do with the country. We've got to find out where we're bleeding our money to, which is kind of the reverse flood, plug those holes up, and then repair those compartments or parts of our industry, parts of our financial system. So, no, you never give up. You don't just assume it's a sinking ship, stop everything, just let it sink. You keep fighting until you stabilize it and start to repair things.
You're talking about something involving common sense, where somebody would actually have to first recognize that there's a hole in the side of the ship and we're taking on water. No one's willing to do that.
No one is willing to do that. And again, just at the start of prep, we talked about Bridgen's last stand-up, which I know you and Ned talked about in Parliament, where he's asking why, despite the numbers demanding a debate on the subject, that the bill to the World Health Organization plandemic bill, pandemic bill, whatever it is, why there isn't a debate on our continued membership of the World Health Organization, despite all their obvious corruptions, crimes, and malfeasance in office, shall we say. So Andrew Bridgen stood up, and Penny Morden, the leader of the House, decided to say, oh, well, of course, we'll have a debate, but the choice was down to the Debates and Petitions Commission, and the fact that they've decided not to debate it is down to them. Well, if enough people in the country demanded that debate, what right have they got to deny the country, the petition signers, that debate? And then she said, but we need to separate out things from what you've said, Mr. Bridgen, because there is no hidden agendas, as you well know, and we'll help you with any other debate. It was just platitudes, it was lies, and it was said on camera in Parliament. And, you know, the Conservatives, the Tories, are getting away with it, and they're being allowed to get away with it because the opposition is totally in bed with the whole globalist concept that this Tory party is working to.
Never know what might happen in Parliament. Yeah, you never know. Somebody could stand up and say something just out of turn like that. Somebody could, I don't know, mention something, such as Mr. Bridgen could mention something that could just hit a little bit too close to home, right? Golf. I know you don't like golf, do you? Snob sport kind of thing. You don't follow it.
No, I tried to play golf. I'm just not very good at it.
No, I mean watching it. You don't watch it.
Oh, I wouldn't watch it. No, that's like watching paint dry. Playing is one thing.
Yes, it's totally different.
But and again, I'm not a super keen golfer, but yeah, it has its merits.
Mm-hmm.
But what you were saying about, you know, saying something and then getting lots of kickback about something. They had a saying in the Royal Air Force, in Bomber Command, you get the most flack when you're over the target. So if you're on target, that's when you're going to get the flack coming back your way. So what have you got for me there?
Well, I've got something here from BBC Sport. This is a man by the name of Gareth Bale. He's the former Wales captain. He says that cardiac arrest can happen anywhere, in a stadium, at work, but most often at home. I've installed an automatic external defibrillator in my home and bought one for every member of my family. Sometimes I take my AED to the golf course. You never know what might happen.
Well, Gareth Bale is a very good footballer. Was, I think he's taken up golf now. Yeah. But if you look at his face, right, I'm a very good judge of faces. And what that says is, if I had half an IQ point less, that puffer jacket would be wearing me. He's not the sharpest tool in the box. He's got, you know, that that kind of slack expression, dull eyes, dimwit grin on his face in this photograph. And yeah, okay, if you can afford it, why not? Why not buy everyone an automatic external defibrillator? We should all probably carry one around.
I keep one in my back pocket. I don't know about you, but...
I bought myself, and it could be used as an AED, I bought myself a great big charging pack, which can you can charge up your mobile phone off it. It's powerful enough to start an SUV. It's a battery backup, and it's got a big powerful light on it. It's got a compressor in it to pump your tires up. And I thought that was such a good idea. I wanted my kids and their partners to have one each in their cars as well for emergencies. Why not? I did it. And if that's what Gareth is doing, good luck to him. But why is it suddenly something worth mentioning on BBC Sports? Probably because of the number of young people suffering now with myocarditis and other heart conditions as a result of being given a... untried, untested mRNA gene therapy, which has f***ed them up.
Oh, no. See, you're misconstruing. This is an article out of The New Scientist published just about 10 days ago. COVID-19 vaccines seem to cut the risk of heart attacks and strokes. Many COVID-19 vaccines occasionally cause side effects such as blood clots or heart inflammation, but overall, they appear to be beneficial in preventing heart and circulatory conditions. They say that the main COVID-19 vaccines seem to have a net positive effect on our heart health. You see, Marty, I think you're not seeing things clearly.
Lies, damn lies, and statistics. Because COVID managed to bump off so many people that had poor immune systems. We expected to lose 130,000 people per year to flu. With the excess deaths, that's reduced the number of people who are going to have heart attacks, but it still damaged a lot of people, in my opinion. It is just my opinion, but it's damaged people. But the other thing is, it was The New Scientist from which I got the article that told me all about the similarities between the protein spike on COVID and that on HIV. That article was all in there right at the start before the crap hit the ventilation machinery. And The New Scientist was actually writing articles about what was happening in the Wuhan virology lab. And it was explaining about the protein spikes. It was explaining about lipid nanoparticles and what they're actually for. And people need to look that up. And Ned's done it to death on here. And I'm grateful that he has, because it needs mentioning every now and again. Lipid nanoparticles were developed to get chemotherapy drugs through every membrane of the body. Traditional vaccines stay in the muscle tissue, and therefore the antibodies are generated in the muscle tissue in the circulation system. With lipid nanoparticles, they were crossing into heart muscles, into brain. And when you get these protein spikes replicating themselves, eventually the cell bursts, it causes a micro blood clot, and it is those that people are suffering with strokes from and the cause of myocarditis. So, yeah, okay, well, what do we want to talk about next?
Perhaps, again, you're just jumping to conclusions, because I have another article here out of the Medical News that says that Medical News Today is a publication. They say that switching arms for vaccines could help boost your immunity. So you see, Marty, maybe you just need to get it in the other arm. Maybe that'll help you.
Does that relate to mRNA vaccines, or does it relate to live attenuated vaccines?
Well, I'm assuming that I don't know, but I am assuming, I'm just assuming that since we are in the realm of now mRNA technology for vaccines, I'm assuming that is what they are referencing here.
Well, in actual fact, it makes sense to the layman that if it stays in the muscle tissue with a live attenuated vaccine, then yes, swapping which muscle group, whether it's the upper outer quarter of your arm or the upper outer quarter of your thigh, which is where you put injections normally, that, yeah, it could. It could spread things around the body and make your immune system, kick your immune system to work better. But if it's mRNA, then it doesn't matter where they stick it, it is going to cross into every membrane and every organ in your body. So that is either bullshit if it's about mRNA vaccines, or if it's about live attenuated, I don't know, but it sounds feasible.
It certainly does. Let me see. I don't know if I have... I have one thing that's not politically related. Did you want to talk on this? Because I mentioned it on the podcast with Melissa about these driving assists, and I was reading an article that an 80,000-pound Jaguar got smashed bits on the M26 by the police because they couldn't get it to stop and the driver lost complete control of it. Did you want to speak to any of those driving assists or anything that I was talking about and how bad it was? It was just terrible. Let me correct myself. It was the car actually went out of control and the driver lost control of it on the M62. Excuse me. The brakes failed and the car automatically accelerated up in excess of 100 miles per hour.
That's scary, isn't it? Where you've
it is,
got
yeah, yeah.
so little control over your vehicle. When we get onto an aircraft, we trust that the pilot knows how to operate that aircraft. When you get into a car, you should be able to trust yourself to operate that vehicle safely. If it's got so many overrides and possibility of going into autonomous control, then that vehicle should not be on the road. I mean, what you were talking about with lane assist with Melissa, I've never experienced a vehicle with lane assist, but I can imagine that it would be extremely unnerving to try to do a maneuver safely in the vehicle and have the vehicle fight back against what you're trying to do. To my mind, that is just... That technology is just a stepping stone that the industry wanted to put in to get ready for absolutely autonomous vehicles. And the only people who are going to be moving around in autonomous vehicles in the future, once they have them, if we let them have them, are whoever's left rich enough and alive to see the benefit of them. They are not necessary. EVs in general, we know our opinion of those. They're not environmentally friendly. They're not a good idea. They're not even that great a vehicle because of the amount of time it takes to charge them up, their range, and their safety record. So, yeah, it's just maddening that people are still thinking that they're doing okay because they've just bought an EV, that they're doing their bit for the environment, that their vehicle somehow makes them more important than somebody else. And it takes unfortunate incidences like this Jag on the M62 to wake people up. That's really all I've got to say on the matter.
I'm not interested in any of these. I had the lane assist and the driving assist where it kind of keeps the distance and things. And like, these things, they'll park themselves. You know, they'll do that and everything now themselves. And we've got autonomous takeover now. And I'm not interested in any of this. Do you know of anybody that's asking for this? I mean, we know car people. Do you know anybody that's asking for this?
Anyone who's a car person, a real car person, wants it. Yeah, they want to be as much in charge as possible.
Okay, the opposite of a car person, somebody that, I mean, we all know lazy people. Are they asking for it? I've not heard a lazy person ask for that.
No, I really haven't. Now, there is that park assist function, but that only works when you switch it on. Believe it or not, I did a TV ad. Well, it wasn't TV. I think it was only going to be shown online for the Volkswagen park assist in the Tiguan. Is that one of theirs?
It is one of theirs. Yeah, that is one of their vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to Dubai on my day off and I got paid to dress up as a waiter and reverse park this Volkswagen. I've got pictures. I can prove it.
I've got to see this.
Whilst I leant out of the window with a tray to serve tea. So
Were you doing an advert for a commercial or something?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, this is pretty good. So you drive past the parking space, you then switch on the park assist, and then you just take your feet off the pedals and it does it for you. You can break and stop the process if you want, and it will just switch it off. But for parking in tight spaces, that's pretty good. But again, most people do not need it. In fact, very, very few people need that kind of assistance. If the space is that tight, park somewhere else for f**k's sake.
I don't like any of that stuff. I can't stand it. Do you have anything else today?
No. Right. Because
we are going to end a little bit early. Yeah, we're going to end a little bit early. You've got to get back to taking care of some things at the office, and I have to get on with my day. It's unfortunate you're not going to be making the poker night on Saturday. I'm really disappointed in that.
Well, I've got to humiliate my family when I beat them in all the board games and trivia quizzes that we're doing, because it's one of our regular things. We do it about once every couple of months. And it just happens that the next one is on Saturday. So because I don't call it useless information, I have a mind full of information I have not found a use for yet. So I love a quiz. I love, you know, strategy games, board games, that sort of stuff. And that's what we're doing on Saturday night. So I'm afraid I'll have to miss the Texas Hold'em.
That's unfortunate. We'll see if we can get another one put together before you jet off to Australia. And we will be talking about that next time you're on. So we will go ahead and, we will go ahead and call this one done. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all the listeners. God bless everyone, and have a great weekend.